the grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast on the Diamantina Podcast Network. We're the best fucking team in the world again. Yes, we are. We're going to crush everyone and everyone in our way. Australia won the first test match there at the Gabba against an excellent Sri Lankan side. We're going to talk about that. Obviously, the test squad has been announced for the Canberra test match, the second test match of that series. The WBBL final happened. The Big Bash, everyone hates it now. We're going to talk about that. And also, England are in the West Indies at the moment and they got absolutely pumped. So our UK listeners will want to know our take on that, which is, I don't know yet.
Yeah.
I don't know yet.
Nor do I.
My name's Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry. Sam, Dave is not here at the moment because he missed his flight this morning. So he will be joining the back half of the show, but not for this first segment. Happy New Year.
Thanks very much. He goes, great to see Australia back in the winner's circle. As we predicted on this show, Nostradamus style, now everything is okay again.
Yes.
Because we got what we wanted, that opiate of winning.
Yeah.
And wasn't it great just after, you know, they did it inside 3 days as well. So we heard all of the, you know, all of the side mouth kind of celebration about, oh, boys, we've got a couple of days on the golf course now, you know. A couple of days on the golf course. So it was a very sleepy test match. We were there at the Gabba. Thank you to those in Brisbane who came to our live show. Thank you to John Buchanan who joined us as well. I don't think he knew what he was getting himself into. But he was very good, as was Trent Copeland, as always. But we went to the Gabba. I hadn't been there before. It was very sleepy. But it was still great to be at the Gabba for the first time and see all those kind of maroon and yellow coloured seats and stuff like that.
So it looked
that.
Like it was full even though 6,000 people turned up. It was the first day.
They said 13,000 people there. That's not true. And I'm sorry, Tim Whitaker, if you are listening to this, but I don't think there was 13,000 people there. Like,
a lot of staff.
There's 45,000 seats at the Gabba, and I don't think there was kind of like six spare seats for every one taken. It was more like 15, but that's okay. 6,000 was there. It was fun. Like, the sun was sapping. Nobody was there. Like, a lot of people were saying, like, oh, gee, why didn't we? Like, why didn't we play India at the Gabba? India did well to avoid us at the Gabba. It's like, hang on a sec. We would have been destroyed by Jasprit Bumrah at the Gabba.
I think, you know what I mean?
Like, there's still this revisionism going on about it. Obviously, Australia does very well at the Gabba. It was a slightly spicy wicket in the very Australian mould. But, like, God, like, we still only made sort of just over 300 plus as well with the bat. I don't think we would have gone that well against India there.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, mate. I think the pink ball as well, you just think, oh, the Indians don't like the pink ball. It's like, I'm not really sure anyone in our top eight like the pink ball either.
Right.
So I think it's like, it's a fun, I mean, it would have been a low-scoring test match maybe. Maybe that would have been the case because it's definitely a case of like the Gabba having a bit of extra bounce and stuff. And it's hard. I mean, Pat Cummins bowled extraordinarily well and you can't say he didn't because he took career best figures and I think the best figures ever taken by Australia against a Sri Lankan side. If he bowls, I'm always comparing to India who are just so good.
Yeah.
And I think like seeing
seeing
Sri Lanka makes me actually appreciate how good India are because that's like what happened to Sri Lanka just is what happens in Australia.
Yeah.
Like you play at the Gabba and it's hard and we win in 3 days and then the guys got a couple of days on the golf course, which is always nice to know what they're getting up to.
A couple of days on the course. I'm just looking at, he goes, speaking out the side of my mouth. Exactly.
I'm over here, Pez. Look at me.
But it was interesting to be there because it had a really, I said sleepy before, but like it was kind of like Australia was on a health retreat in a way. Like after, you know, scrapping in the jungle against India where every session was just a real struggle, a real arm wrestle. It just, you sort of knew Australia was going to win being at the ground. Like the bowlers bowled faster. You know, it was one of those things like when Sri Lanka started bowling in Australia's first innings, you sort of had like watching their opening bowlers with respect to them and they did end up, you know, they still knocked over Burns and Khawaja in that first spell. But they were sort of like considerably slower than the Australian bowlers. It was it felt like a step down.
Yeah.
And it probably was more exacerbated in those conditions. So, like, yeah, India was like a jungle scrap. Sri Lanka was like a health retreat, you know, just getting the skin looking better again, just making sure you're just dining out on some health food and stuff. And I suppose with that in mind, like, I mean, Jai Richardson, what a great debut he had. He looked incredible. He doesn't drink, and that's probably also why he looks incredible.
Right.
But yeah.
There was a moment when I was driving home back from the show from Brisbane, and I was listening to ABC Grandstand, and Quentin Hull was on commentary when Jai Richards took his first Test wicket, and I as a man, Pez, you know that I don't cry. I don't have the capacity.
I've never seen you cry.
To cry,
yeah.
But I'll only cry in two moments. One is, you know, soldiers coming home from war.
Oh, aren't they great YouTube clips too? Just to feel something.
Second one is when a sportsman achieves something.
Yeah.
Like, it's the only moments that get me.
Yeah.
And like, Quentin Hull did this amazing job of commentary.
Yeah.
Where like Jai Richardson takes his first wicket, and like, it filled me with like this void that I haven't. It's just like, you know that thing where like you get, it's not butterflies, it's a little bit higher than that, but it's a similar feeling. And I like had this like welling of emotions, like, oh, this guy's just achieved his entire life dream that like that I wanted to do, but I do a podcast.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I get it with parents watching children.
Oh, yeah.
So the Olympic swimming really gets me going.
Yeah,
like
right.
When they zoom in on the parents after they've won, I really well up and get that lump in my throat.
Yeah.
And I can't see it ever happening for our podcast where there's some kind of inset of my dad watching me on a microphone. I don't think I would feel the same way.
Go get him, Pezza. Go get him.
Exactly.
Tell a joke. Well, yeah. That was a good throw down.
That's right. They rate 2 on the iTunes charts behind Howie Games.
So, yes, I thought it was I was so happy for him in that moment. It was awesome. And also, probably more importantly, from an Australian cricketing perspective, was that he bowled incredibly well. And there's a bit of a thing now about Mitchell Starc has probably underperformed this summer. Well, he has. He did take his 200th test wicket during this match, but he has been wayward and a little bit, you know, some experts out there would say, well, he just needs to fix his body language.
Probably
a technical aspect.
There are books on that.
Yeah, it's probably a technical aspect with his bowling is probably what's actually going on. But, if he stands a little taller, maybe he'll take some more wickets. I'm not sure.
Puffs his chest out.
I found it interesting during the India test match, a lot of journalists like put together the Ashes squad and Gideon Hay, probably the foremost cricket writer in Australia, possibly the world, didn't have Starc in his team. And a few other guys didn't have Starc in his team going into that Ashes test match. Do you think Mitch Starc is under a bit of pressure?
Yeah, I think he's definitely under pressure. And, 15 wickets at 36.47 I have here to the second decimal
of course.
Place.
Yes.
They tried to bring him on late in the first innings as well to take some of those tail end wickets, which he's been so noted to do in the past, a couple of consolation wickets in a situation where Richardson probably could have taken those wickets. So I think they're – I mean, there's no doubt there's concern over him. He's an interesting bowler, Starc, in that sense. Like, he does remind me of Johnson, not just because he's a tall left armer who bowls really quickly, but, like, their skill and their effectiveness relies so much on the ability to shape the ball. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously a very precise kind of skill. And there's all the Bronx, you know, humour about not having Warner in the side so he can't reverse swing it and stuff like that. But he does seem to be struggling with whatever wrist position or technique you need to move the ball in. He's bowling those floaty ones outside off stump or missing leg stump, you know, missing leg altogether and bypassing Tim Payne. The thing with a guy like Starc, though, is that, like, he's one of those guys like Johnson where, like, a slight little tinker, a slight fix, everything else just clicks into gear and he could very, very quickly become Australia's premier bowler again. So it's a tough one going into the Ashes. I suspect that he won't be selected on how he went in this tour, but more on whether he's just in decent nick, you know, in mid-July. Because you're right, like if he's on song, Australia is a real shout of doing some damage to the England top order. But if he's off, you know, he's really bad. He's like, you know, girls gone wild, you know. When they're good, they're really good. But when they're bad, oh no, that's their sensational.
Not enough comparisons to Mitch Starc and Girls Gone Wild,
that's
in
right.
my opinion.
Yeah,
yeah. The thing is, I of course love the thing about, well, Warner's out of the team, so we're not cheating anymore. Therefore, Starc not a good bowler, but he's not swinging it with a new ball.
That's right,
and that's kind of more indicative and more a bigger indicator of like what's actually going on with his bowling.
I remember this with Mitch Johnson though. He goes, before he had his absolute breakout Ashes series in Australia, I was off him. Like, I'd had enough of him.
Oh, really?
I just felt he'd had so many. There were so many occasions seasons when he kind of his poor form and poor technique kind of cost Australia a first innings or second innings. That's how bad it could become with him. And I remember they played an ODI series against India before the 2015 Ashes, and Tendulkar, sort of a propos of nothing, came out and said, Johnson's bowling quick again. And I still shrugged it off and went, look, I've heard it all before with Mitch Johnson. You know, and like I'd had enough of him and thought, you know, some other, like a Siddle or whatnot should sort of get the start. And he came out and, as we know, absolutely destroyed England. And that's always going to be the temptation with Stark, isn't it? It's like, well, if he just gets this one thing right, he'll be fine. So I suspect they're going to look at him much closer just to see if he's moving the ball, because that just seems to be the kind of the great metric as to whether he's bowling well or not.
I know it's a bit of a funny thing about how people say he needs to fix his body language, people being Shane Warne. But, like, he does strike me as a confidence bowler. You know, like, I think he could take a wicket with a new ball in, like, his second or third over and, you know, possibly just run through a team. You know, I think he is that kind of bowler. But, I mean, it's all up in the air at this point. So in the agenda here, I've got...
We could keep talking about Stark for ages.
In the agenda here, I've got still no hundreds this summer. Ha ha.
Ha ha, yeah. Is there a space between the ha's there?
Yeah.
So the two guys that came closest were Labuschagne and Travis Head. And can I just put out there quite tentatively, is Manus Labuschagne, and this is what I've got on my agenda, dot, 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 good? Because he looked good. You must hand to him, and you can only play what's in front of you, X, Y, Z. But I thought his balance and his rhythm and the way he, you know, it's a, it is an Aussie thing, but the way he got forward impressed me.
Got on the front dog?
Yeah, the way he front dogged.
Mate, I don't think he's played a bad innings yet for Australia, has he? I mean, even the UAE, a couple of 30s. Like there is something there.
I can
see the thing that has like got him into the Australian team. Well, I can see that there's potential there. I think like he has been incredibly lucky to be given the chances that he's already received. But like, I mean, so far he looks capable. He looks capable cricketer. I mean, I think there's
I don't think people's have an issue with Manus Labuschagne in and of himself. It's it's his path to the side and who he jumps over that bothers people so much. But it's annoying when guys like that score 80, though. Just score 100 and let us stop thinking about it. Do you know what I mean?
I am actually kind of I don't want us to score 100 this summer. Like I need the record. I'm happy for us. For us to win in Canberra by an innings and 950 runs and 10 wickets somehow. But, like, I kind of need the record, because I think Australia's batting has been so bad this summer that it's just like, well, it can only get worse than this. I mean, it can only get better than this, sorry.
It's funny, isn't it? Like, as Labuschagne and Head's kind of crept towards their centuries, it still felt really difficult to score 100. And yet, like, then you watch all these highlights of Australian cricket, you know, a decade ago or beyond, and just people just sped to hundreds easily. Like you sort of went and got a cup of tea and Hayden was 80 odd. You know what I mean? It's just the way it is at the moment. There were some other green shoots, though. I mean, we've talked about Jai Richardson already. I thought Curtis Patterson looked good. And there's nothing better than just, you know, italicising the idea of looking good as a test player. And Langer backed this up. He said he thought Curtis Patterson looked like a test batsman, which is a pretty good endorsement from the coach. He had such a good rhythm going. And then there was a bit of a thought we might declare, and that probably just messed his rhythm a little bit. But he's a good-looking player. No better compliment in Australian cricket. And he says he's another cricket tragic. So you like having cricket tragics in the Australian cricket team who love the game. That's an interesting, you know, that's an interesting soft power comment, I think, on Australian cricket. I mean, there'd be a huge school of people out there who would say, no, we don't want anyone who loves the game in the side at all. We want exclusively Julios who pretend not to like the game but are just good at it anyway. And then they in turn kind of push down those who actually love cricket.
Yes, we want more people who are failed footballers. Or just, you know, love having a stick on the golf course.
Yeah, having a stick, dress well, good pipes, you know.
That kind of stuff. And Marcus Stoinis has joined the squad for Canberra.
We'll talk about that.
Well, we can probably talk about it now, I suppose.
Can I just say quickly before we get to before we look forward, Usman Khawaja. 212 runs at 23.
Yeah.
0.55 since his 100 in Dubai.
Yeah.
How long can he dine out on that? I ask that seriously.
He'll play every Ashes test match.
Yeah.
He'll play all five Ashes test matches. Won't he? Why wouldn't he? I mean, like, surely there are other guys. There are probably, I mean, it's the same thing with Sean Marsh. I mean, I think there's a thing of like, I think there are three guys who are probably ahead of him to be dropped before Khawaja is under threat.
Just say though, he it's not just missing out with the bat. Khawaja has regularly looked out of sorts since arriving, like when arriving at the crease. So we're talking about not just, you know, nine scores of below 50 in a row, but looking very ugly in the time, not looking close to a 50 as well. I mean, I don't think these are unfair things to say to friend of the show, Usman Khawaja. I think some mitigating circumstances around his brother and coming back from a knee injury as well. But yeah, he's dining out on past performances at the moment.
Is there a thing of like, it's not also just those low scores, it's like there's no consistent way he's getting out? He's getting out in like so many different ways all the time. He's nicking, he's still got the off-spin problem. He was like cutting a ball on leg stump in this game.
He essentially hasn't been able to assert himself over any attack. So it was just a bit instructive watching him against Sri Lanka, which is obviously a vastly different attack to India. And I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, and he's looking for my view on this.
Yes, he is.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Pink ball under lights, etc. So, I mean, it all, like, there's about six guys in that lineup who cannot wait for the road of Manuka Oval to absolutely, like, just to make up for all of their statistical blemishes over the entire summer. That's what Canberra promises. Like Kevin Roberts, you've done an absolute, like, this is a masterstroke. Let's play the worst team in the world on the literally, like statistically proven, the greatest road in cricket. And let's just boost our stats gloriously.
Pez, I played one game at Manuka Oval as a kid, and I got bowled first ball of the innings. So you know, it does do a little bit early, Pez, as you know, famously.
What would you say in relation to selection? So looking forward to Manuka, looking forward to Canberra. You feel sorry for Hanscom and Marsh and those guys who essentially had to face probably the best fast bowler of the next 10 years in Jasprit Bumrah. In a situation where they've got no protection from Smith and Warner. And so they lose their spots facing the best side in the world. Only for guys like Burns and Patterson and whatnot to swan into Manuka and probably make their bow and get their seat on the Ashes. Like if you, for example, flip that around and just ask, like Burns and Patterson and Pekoski and these guys to face India, only for Hanscom to come in against like Sri Lanka at Manuka. You know, it's a different story, isn't it?
No, I agree. I think Sean Marsh has been unlucky. And treated a little bit
I'm unfairly. Glad he's out in that sense because he would just be absolutely nailed on for 164 not out against Sri Lanka at Manuka.
A couple of wickets of the ball as well.
That's right. Why not?
Stoinis going to play in Canberra, Piz?
Well, you know, you want to see it, don't you?
Yeah.
Just to see the chest.
I think his shirt is going to look good.
It's really funny. There was this segment on that Channel 7 ran during their one of the many rain delays at the SCG, upon which the great cricketer was not featured despite being recorded three or four times. What's going on? Where he was interviewed and he was asked about his test ambitions. Do you think you'll get a game? And he said, like, really, he seemed to look really confident when he said, like, when he said, "Yeah, you'll see me there." I just wonder if he's been, just wonder if he's sort of been told you're going to be in and around the boys. And we've talked about being like, we've talked about this because Lang has come out and said he'd like to keep the same 11. He'd like some continuity. They've won a game and he wants to keep the same 11.
Yeah,
and yet they've brought Stoinis in.
Yeah.
So is he a selection that is ultimately about just bringing him to be in and around the boys?
He's got to be in and around them.
Is it an around the boys selection?
Yeah. Well, to me, it says he's going to the Ashes. So maybe it is an in and around thing. I mean, like, because it was a bit like, you know, when Curtis Patterson got brought into the squad, it was okay, well, he's going to play then. There's no point bringing him in to the team, into the squad, if he isn't going to play. Stoinis might be a little bit different because I don't know who he'd replace necessarily, unless they think it's going to be so flat, Canberra, that they need the extra
fifth bowler. Yeah.
In which case, what, does Patterson get dropped? Probably.
Yeah, so, well, the players you could feasibly drop would be Patterson, which would, I think, be a little bit, like, counterproductive given his start. You could drop Joe Burns, which would be grossly unfair. You could drop Usman Khawaja on the basis that, you know, we just want to have a look at another guy. So, I don't know. I mean, you could drop Mitch Stark and play Stoinis as a third quick. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see him play. And of course, like, it's not just a selection to bring him into the test squad so he can get a feel for it. He's been in the test squad before over in India. They've brought him in there. So he knows the international setup. Is it just a nod to him to say you're close?
Yeah,
it's just like, oh, you're
maybe
close.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it is a nod. It's just like when you go back to Shield, you know, you do that, you know, put some numbers on the board and you're going to go to the, I think he's probably going to go anyway.
I mean, they want he's. You can see now that like they want to retrofit him into. Yeah. They want to engineer and manufacture his arrival into the side.
Yes, but I don't understand why you would take, you know, an all rounder to England, another seamer to England. Like if you've got three quicks and a spinner, which Australia do famously, like why do we need an all rounder? I think seems to me Australia only want the all rounder when the wickets are flat, i.e. Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah, they're just very big on the fast bowler protection, aren't they? It's like any time there's a risk that one of their trio will go down, they need someone else to bowl seam up.
But it's only the over which is flat in England, really. Mm. But even then, still it still does more than what it does here.
I've got to say, like, although Stoinis doesn't have any first-class or red ball figures to suggest he would make the step up to Test cricket, like, I'm willing to believe that, like, he has some kind of spark to him. Mm. I don't know what – with the ball especially.
A bit like Stokes?
Well, Stokes has done a lot at Test level. I mean, he's shown so much.
Yes.
But I just think with Stoinis, like, there are so many times when Australia looks benign bowling in a first or second innings if a partnership's established. I've got no stats to back that up in any way. Mm. But he does have a way of creating something, Stoinis. He does have a presence. He's very Australian in that sense, and that just goes against my entire philosophy of actually picking guys based, you know, rewarding them for stats, but that's what a rig will do.
So Stoinis in for the Ashes and all time. Pez, the Heat won the Sixers WBBL final. My big takeaway from this is that at least Perry finished the season with 776 runs in the tournament. That's averaging 86 in T20 cricket. Mm. Her team didn't win.
Yeah, didn't win the final, but...
So she's beaten cricket.
Oh, I see. This is one of those...
I did the thing.
I did really good, but my team went bad. This is the best thing. Yeah. Got it. I've got down here on my agenda, Perry shit shot. I think she got out at an inopportune time. When is an opportune time to get out, I suppose. Mm. But, they kind of laboured the Sydney Sixers in that first innings. Did you watch it?
No.
By the way? Okay, yeah. No. They laboured...
Sorry, highlights.
Yeah,
I watched the half hour thing. I didn't watch the full game.
On Fox Sports?
Yes.
Okay, KO.
Yeah, KO.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He said out loud at Channel 7.
That's right, where it's literally sitting in Channel 7. Unbelievable. They just laboured the Sixers. They couldn't get away from the Heat. And then it was one of those things, though. It was funny watching it at Drummoyne Oval. I played a lot of club cricket there. Yes. Played a lot of PGs there. So for the listeners there, Port Evan Grey is like the under 21s comp.
Right.
And the number of times I've played at that ground for to bat in the second innings and watch my team look like they're going to go and get the total only to collapse in an absolute heap because we need four or five runs and over, and that just induces panic. Mm-hmm. it left me like having nightmares about that, watching the Heat need six or seven and over, because they lost a few wickets after Beth Mooney's wonderful and ultimately match-winning innings. And I thought, these girls will collapse here. They can't go six or seven and over. Yeah. Essentially kind of revealing my own prejudices.
Yeah.
And that was just completely wrong. They're professionals and they won with four balls to spare quite comfortably.
I thought like the Sixers were just going to go through this whole tournament undefeated, which went immediately out the window when they lost the first game of the season. But then I thought, well, the Heat have played they've already played their final in the semi-final where they won with an amazing catch off the last ball against, who was that? I think it's Adelaide.
Against the Thunder.
Thunder, yeah. That's right, yeah. And then I thought, well, no, they're out here. And then you just see the names in the Sixers team. It's the Australian team. Yeah. Basically. And it's like, no, that's the
one. Dave's here.
Yeah, Dave's just rolled in.
Oh, yeah, jump onto the show, Dave. Why don't we just roll with? I was talking about WBBL. What'd you make of it?
My head's still spinning, mate. I've only just rolled in, as you saw, had a terrible morning. Had to get on a Jetstar flight to Avalon, which is like dealing with the great unwashed. It's all just confused American tourists who don't know what Avalon is and just pissed off businessmen who've had to change their flight last minute, like me. So I don't really know where I am or what
this is. Do you consider yourself a businessman doing this podcast?
Yes.
Yes, because I do.
Yeah. No, I am a businessman. Mm. The WBBL, though, what does that stand for?
So the Heat took out the title. Elise Perry and Elisa Healy failed, despite being good individual players. We thought that Sydney would win because we're from there and, we're used to New South Wales winning, although that's not really been the case for 10 years in both codes. So let's talk about men's BBL.
Yeah. Right. Well, the big takeaway is that it's still a thing. It's still on. It's still happening. It's still going on. There's been a few articles written today.
The big takeaway is that it's on.
Mm. Is that it's on. It's still on. And the big takeaway is that there's been some articles written this week about how it's really, have CA killed the golden goose.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of journalists are kind of starting to coalesce around this idea that anecdotally has been growing, that the Big Bash goes for too long, that 14 games is maybe too much. I think there's a little bit to unpack within all of it, a bit, because you've had a similar sense here, because I think we've all had a sense that there's something missing in the Big Bash this year. There's something less exciting about it. And I've kind of I've argued that it's not necessarily that it goes for 14 games. I think that it's a little bit disingenuous or inaccurate for people to suggest that 14 games versus 10 is what makes their viewing experience somehow lesser. What I do think is accurate is that, like, the games haven't been as good, and you have to look into why. Like, why have there been very few close finishes? Why is it when I turn it on, I see poorer quality cricket than what I seem to remember? You know, why do I get the feeling that, like, every side has three really good, high-profile, professional T20 players and the rest are kind of, like, with respect, mediocre first-class cricketers or clubbies, even though some of them go quite well?
I think that's a good point, Pez, and I think you got to view the Big Bash as a reality show, like many of the reality shows that are running over the course of the summer. And what makes those reality shows great are characters. You know, you need not just one or two, you know, good ones, but you need a whole cast of characters, interesting characters, whether it's My Kitchen Rules or Married at First Sight, or, you know, you want to turn on, it's appointment viewing, you want to see hot dogs on Big Brother. That's what you want.
Yes.
And at the moment, we're not seeing hot dogs on Big Brother.
Where's
or
Big
the Big Bash.
Hot dogs.
It's just not, it's not engaging. I don't want to switch on and watch, you know, some bloke from grade cricket hit 30 or 50.
The first, like, few games of the season, like, just teams were getting bowled out for 100. Like, you should never be bowled out in a T20 game.
Well, Scorchers got bowled out last night for 70 odd, didn't they?
So, I mean, it's just like, I mean,
they were the best team.
Just love it. They were the randomly best team. Obscure knowledge of cricket. Like, that would have happened at like 10 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah. You just,
but and I said it so nervously, exactly. You hear the quiver in my voice.
Yeah. Didn't they have? Didn't they?
It's like the base level knowledge I should have for this podcast.
But, like, I think, like, a huge problem around the country is that the wickets are shit.
Yeah.
Consistently. Like, around the country, the wickets are shit. I mean, Spotless is a dump.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be playing games of cricket there.
Well, to be fair, it was, you know, the curators, the same blokes that did the Opal Tower right next door in Homebush.
MCG, trash. SCG, awful. I mean, Adelaide are churning out some good wickets. Optus Stadium over there in Perth, there's been some high scores over there.
But a bit of racism in the stands.
But yeah, there's there is some of that. But like, I think, like, you make good, fast, bouncy wickets that, you know, induce shots and high run scoring makes games closer.
Create the conditions that are conducive for good sport.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
So in order to, like, because I think there's just so much discussion about how to improve the Big Bash, and I do think there's just some inaccuracies out there a little bit. Like, I think people may, my sense is that people are drawing a line between Australia sucking at Test cricket at the moment and going, why is that the case? And then looking at the Big Bash, which has now been extended, and thinking, well, too much energy is going into this format. And I just think that, like, perhaps this is a bit crass, but, like, if Steve Smith and David Warner were playing this year and Australia gave India a good show, you view the Big Bash a little bit differently. I do think those things are right. I think the pitches need to be better. There need to be better players involved. There need to be some closer finishes. I think that the Big Bash is looking like a bit of a symbol of Cricket Australia greed at the moment, in that, like, it's been extended, more resources seem to go into it, less into the test side. But I'm not sure that's quite the case.
The broadcasters aren't very happy about it either.
Yeah, that's
are they?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, they had Chris Lynn marked up the other day just saying, oh, it goes too long. Just more.
And then Seven kind of retweeted that as a graphic.
Yeah, exactly.
What's going on there?
Yeah, our good friends at Seven Digital. Yeah, that was funny watching Chris Lynn do that and reading about it. Like just more evidence that Chris Lynn, like, doesn't really like cricket. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like us.
Yeah.
Isn't the thing, though, like, if there were more close games in the Big Bash, it wouldn't matter if the season went for bloody 28 games.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
You would enjoy it. If you turned on the game of cricket, you know, in February and there's a close game happening, you're going to watch it. You go, this is good. This is good entertainment. If it's like 170 plays 165 or something, that's if it, but if it's like, if it's 85 and then the other team gets it three down in 16 overs, you go, well, you know, Married at First Sight's on. Probably want to watch that.
People should read Dan Bredig's article where apparently Cricket Australia are considering shifting the schedule and starting the Big Bash League on Boxing Day. So not starting it off so early.
Caving. They're caving to public pressure.
Same amount of games, same number of games, just in a shorter time.
Backtrack, not doing the thing they said they would do. Got to always do the thing they said
they would do. Well, should we touch on...
Come on, let's do it, yeah.
Let's get on to England and the West Indies. Or the West Indies.
People hanging out for
England
our take on this.
Oh, at Bridgetown there. So they played the first test there. West Indies fucking smashed them, won by 381 runs.
Yep.
England were rolled for 77 in the first innings, even with that's with Ben Folkes batting at 8.
Yep.
And then Jason Holder, he was batting at 8 for the West Indies, and he scored 202 not out. I'm not sure if you've seen Jason Holder bat, but his career aggregate must be about 202, and he just doubled it.
Oh, that's probably harsh on Jason
Holder. It definitely is, yeah. He's a captain.
Well, he's just been announced as the ICC's leading all-rounder, hasn't he? I know that because I read it this morning.
You're so proud. Your eyebrows raised.
That's because Stoinis hasn't been picked yet.
Yeah, righto.
Yeah, so it was Jimmy Anderson took 5 for 46 off 30 in the first innings. Yeah,
he's
and then
amazing.
was out there batting with a score on 70
like
odd.
Hey guys, just beatering me about my cricket knowledge.
Yeah.
it's nice. It's really nice to know what my role is.
Kemar Roach 5 for 17 as England got bowled for 77. Holder then 202 not out, and then England capitulated for 246 with Roston Chase, a part-time offie, taking 8 for 60. Pretty good.
I don't know what to take away from this. I did not see this coming. I mean, like maybe like a closer game, I would have thought. I mean, England played some good cricket recently. You know, they just beat Sri Lanka over there away, which is a lot easier than only a lot harder than winning at the Gabba, for instance, against the same team. But the team's good. I thought England's team looks good. I mean, folks batting at 8, it's deep. You got Curran opening bowling there with Anderson. Anderson's just incredible. Anderson's about 53 years old. He bowled 30 overs, 5 for 46. He's still doing the job. But they've just lost by 381 runs by the West Indies.
We've got to play England pretty soon. And we just played India, and aren't they over smashing New Zealand? I just don't know what team is good against whom. It's kind of
I think
confusing
there is
times.
A bit of a thing, Eddos, in that like I don't think Australia's as bad as like as what we're kind of I don't know.
No, I just kind of mid tier.
Yeah, but maybe England's not as good as what we were thinking.
It's so all maybe, about
it's is just, the Ashes
who's
back on?
Good and who's bad. Binary answers.
I want binary answers.
No way.
Who's top of the table?
Just remember,
confusing when there's grey areas
just remember,
and things.
Listen, all right. When we go to England, it will be Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad, Swan Song. Right? It will be overcast. We'll have blokes like Smith and Warner haven't played for like 8,000 years. The rest of us haven't made 100. And Jimmy Anderson will have the ball. Just remember, he'll have a Duke's ball. It'll be dark. It'll be overcast. Nothing that happened in the West Indies will matter. And we can't play the moving ball. It boils down to that. It really does.
Where does Sean Marsh fit into the team?
Exactly. It's just going to be an absolute swan song for those blokes. Oh. Nothing else will matter.
How can we counter that? Is Kane Richardson the answer? We need one answer.
Exactly.
Is that it?
I thought it was a 17-year-old wunderkind upon which to hold our pin our hopes and dreams.
Or couples.
All right. Well, the agenda's a little bit hazy because we're in the works, as ever, as trying to get a second special guest on top of what we've already planned. So one thing is for sure is that Lloyd Pope is coming up in a moment's time.
As mentioned earlier, he goes, was at the Gabba last week. The Gabba's the only place that I could think of on the international cricket circuit. Actually, in the entire cricket circuit that actually has a pool there. And
Lords? Lords doesn't have one, does it?
No.
I
thought maybe.
Nor should it.
Yeah.
The home of cricket.
It has a pool, so obviously that gives rise to many camera shots there of good-looking people, male and female. Many of them were wearing Budgie Smuggler at the pool.
Budgie
Smuggler must have an array of models. If you look at their social pages and just want to look at people with good rigs, as many people do on social, just go onto there. Onto Budgie Insta. Just an absolute plethora, an endless cascade.
Glistening brown bodies, you know, at Balmoral and other wonderful beachside areas, sipping on soy lattes. Can you please stop me now?
And they're wearing the retro cricket wear, etc. But you can get custom smugglers as well. You can get anything you want on it. I'd like to talk to each of you about what you would have on custom smugglers. Right. I'm thinking Labuschagne's bat, which is obviously specifically designed to ensure that all the cherries are in the middle of the bat. Now, cherries, I don't think I've said that in about 15 years.
Yeah.
We do know from an earlier conversation that Justin Langer wants cricket nuffies in the side. He likes Curtis Patterson because he loves cricket.
Yes.
Clearly, Labuschagne is the leader of this. And yeah, I'd like to commemorate Labuschagne's cherry-laden bat on the custom smugglers that I would hypothetically purchase.
Pez, I've got Jason Holder 202. That's what I've got on mine. On the back, on the front, is Jason Holder's face.
Yeah. And Dave, what would you
have? You can get that if you want. It's custom wear.
I'll probably just have all the crowd attendance figures for Big Bash games this season. Just lined up one after another around the swimmers just to kind of showcase the product because it needs a bit of help.
So your swimwear would just look like a set of endless numbers.
Or just zeros and one.
Binary numbers,
We are is numbers. So custom smugglers from Budgie Smuggler. Go into budgiesmuggler.com.au. If you purchase over 11, you know, for your bucks party, for your team, for your extended family, and use the discount code CHAMP, you'll get some kind of discount that I can't remember at the moment. But it will be fun to type in CHAMP and then just see there.
See what comes up.
A lesser price.
Yes. Smaller number than the one originally before. A discount, if you will.
Industry term.
budgiesmuggler.com.au. Dave, here goes a very, very special guest we've got on the show this week. A much sought-after guest who's been tough to track down, it must be said, protected by all the comms managers in Cricket Australia, but we've managed to go around and secure this man who I'm going to introduce just now. Lloyd Pope shot to prominence in Queenstown in 2018 when he demolished England with the figures of 8 for 35.
Yes.
We all saw it.
Yes.
The best figures ever produced in an under-19 World Cup. Nearly 25 years after England were first shocked by Shane Warne's ball of the century, another Australian leg spinner, it seemed, had appeared to haunt them. He's since made his first-class debut for South Australia, soon taking 7 for in another devastating spell. He's with the Sixers at the moment, treating us to an exhibition of titillating wrong-uns, the likes of which we haven't seen since Clary Grimmett, and what a wrong-un he had. Although he bowled in a hat. He's got the best salad in world cricket, possibly sport. It's Lloyd Pope. Lloyd, welcome to The Grade Cricketer.
Jeez, thanks for having me on. That's quite an introduction.
You're very welcome, future king. Lloyd, it's called The Grade Cricketer. Can you just tell us about your relationship to grade cricket? You've obviously succeeded at under-19 level and now play state cricket. Have you forgotten the name of the grade club you play for, as is the wont of every professional cricketer?
No, definitely not. I play for Kensington in South Australia, and it's an amazing club. And to be fair to them, they've sort of given me so many opportunities. I'm very lucky to have been part of that organisation. They've been very good to me.
So, Lloyd, you mentioned that your club, Kensington, that's where Don Bradman played and also Clary Grimmett. Is there any sort of, like, recognition or, like, a celebration of those two great Australian icons? Because Dave and Sam here played for North Sydney, where Bradman also played, but that is completely neglected in any sort of historical monument of any kind.
It's really nice, sort of, after a win and going up to the clubhouse, we've got all the names on the honour board, and Bradman's name mentioned it a couple of times there around the World War II era and stuff like that. So, it's nice to have that club culture to go back on, and it brings a little bit of attention to Kensington as well. It's really nice to have the likes of him and Clary Grimmett sort of play for Kensy.
Mm. And what's Kensy like as a club, and how were you kind of accepted there, you know, as a young player of promise? Did they all get around you in a good way, or, you know, what's some of the characters like at Kensington?
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I'm fortunate enough to have quite a lot of the Redbacks boys as well to play for Kensy, so they've been really, really helpful in my career, and they've welcomed me in with open arms. I played a juniors there from about 13 years old from right up until the A grade. So I've played every grade for Kensy, and every single team sort of loved having me there, and they've got a bunch of wise heads, and it's really, really positive. I love playing there.
So, Lloyd, you strike me as one of these, like Jason Sanger, these, you know, pleasant, very polite young men who say very nice things about their club. I don't believe it for a second. After you took 8 for 35 in the under-19s, how did your grade cricket experience change? I mean, how much do you start looking over people's shoulders when they talk to you and stuff and essentially neglect to remember the names of anyone in a grade below you?
I definitely copped a little bit of heat for that. I don't think it's very true, but yeah, they love jumping on that and sort of taking it down a peg. But they're really nice about it, and they give credit when credit's due. But as soon as you start sort of saying your own performances or anything like that, that 15 blokes jump in to cut you down and tell you when you went done for 100 in the C grade or something. So they're straight onto all of that sort of stuff.
That's comforting to hear. Lloyd, I just going back to your kind of upbringing, I read that your dad told you to try leggies after, you know, a net session where he deemed your seamers subpar. And that's kind of how you discovered you were good at wrist spin. Did your dad point out any other flaws in your game growing up?
a lot of flaws, definitely. Lucky enough to sort of have him throughout my career, and he's just been really, really helpful and really supportive. And everything I've tried, he's sort of tried to just like look at, and he didn't really play cricket, but watched a lot of it. So he's tried to sort of impart all the things that he's heard from the commentators and what he's seen over the years and stuff like that. So yeah, lucky enough for him to say to try leggies, I probably wouldn't be here where I am now if I was still bowling some 90k metres. But you never know.
Apologies in advance, Lloyd. This is it's all going to get a little bit weird as this conversation goes on, but let's keep it kind of above board. Let's talk about your 8 for 35 against England. I mean, just your recollections from it. Did you have any idea this would happen? I heard Sanger was going to take you off, and then you sort of got in his ear and convinced him, which having chatted with him last week didn't seem like it would be a hard thing to do. he's just generally a really nice guy. But it was just, what are your recollections from the day?
It's a little bit of a blur. I remember a little bit of panic stations when we got bowled out for not too many, and I was at decent wicket, and we were thinking, oh, like, what can we do here? And then I think we're about none for 50. Tommy Banton from England was batting pretty well. And I don't think Sanger was going to take me off, but I think he was thinking about bringing me on, and then people got hit a bit, and it was just sooner rather than later sort of thing. And as I said, it was just a bit of a blur from there, and a couple of wickets pretty quickly, and then I think we went to the break and they were five down, and we had some real confidence, and after that, they fell over pretty quickly, and it was a really, really good cricket moment, and every guy in that squad really loved it, and it was an amazing day.
Mate, ever since then, really, it's just been like going from strength to strength. Obviously, from there, the debut for South Australia, the 7 for, I think the youngest Australian to ever take 7 wickets in a Shield game. You know, playing for the Sixers, all the hype going around about you being the new Warne, all that kind of stuff. Like, are you finding it quite difficult to keep yourself grounded or quite level-headed about the whole thing? I mean, you've only just turned 19. It's like a lot of things that happened for you in the last sort of 12 months. Are you finding it hard, the sort of new notoriety and all that kind of stuff?
A little bit, but I'm fortunate enough to take a couple of wickets, and sort of I feel like I believe in myself, and I back myself to be able to perform at those really high levels. And but in saying that, it definitely keeps me grounded. Some other games I've bowled, and I thought I bowled really well, and other teams have played me like pretty easily, and that sort of stuff. And so there's definitely lots of ups and downs in the career, but I feel like the ups just show me that when I'm at my best, I can perform that level, and that's really sort of nice to believe that. And obviously my teammates say that as well, and that back me in. But I definitely don't think I'm going to accelerate really quickly or anything like that. I think there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm really looking forward to it. Mm.
I mean, have you got anyone around you who's kind of taking a mentoring role? I know a lot of young spinners, you know, fall under the wing of Shane Warne. Have you got Shane Warne? Have you got his number? Do you call him? Is he on your speed dial? Or has he kind of been in touch with you to talk about the art of leg spin or just circuiting in general?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to have half an hour with him at the Adelaide Oval. I think he was doing a bit of commentary there before a test match. And John Davidson from Cricket Australia brought me down, and I just managed to shake his hand and say good day, and he sort of had a look at me bowl a couple of balls and said he really liked what was going on and basically good luck with the future. But that's probably to the extent that I've had to do with him. So not a whole lot, but it was nice to have that experience. It was a couple of years ago, so that gave me a little bit of confidence going into a couple more games, which is nice.
Shane, if you're listening, yeah, Lloyd Pope is available for a phone call.
we actually have his number. Lloyd, we'll move on to the throwdown section. So as I always say, apologies in advance. We'll just give you a few throwdowns here. I'll just kick it off with a gentle one, really. Lloyd, at what point did you realise that the twin phenomena of an incredible salad and incredible wrongen held the key to unquenchable popularity in Australian sport?
I'm not sure. Probably, maybe after the England game, I got a lot of different comments from a couple of different people about sort of the haircuts and things like that. But I've had a little bit of a trim since then, so the hair doesn't get in my eyes anymore, which is a little bit of a help. So I can see when the ball's coming back at me. It gives me about a 20% chance to catch the caught and bowled.
What's the feedback been like on the new haircut? Have you seen a dramatic, you know, drop in the number of followers you have on social media, or the reverse?
No, nothing too drastic like that, thank goodness. But, I've copped a little bit of heat from some of my mates about got to grow it back and things. So it might make a return in the future, but we'll have to see.
Well, on last week's podcast, your South Australian teammate Adam Zampa said that he really hated grade cricket. Have you told him that he better get used to it because you're younger and already better than him?
I definitely don't hate grade cricket. I don't think Zorba has played too many grade games in the last couple of years, considering his Australian career is getting a bit ahead of him. But I love grade cricket, and all the guys there, as I said, are really, really good to play with, and it's a lot of fun.
You're lying again.
I love grade cricket. Sure you do.
You won't soon.
You won't soon, exactly. Lloyd, it's widely accepted that if you willfully choose to bowl spin, there must be something wrong with you. Being the latest to enter the Eccentric Spinners Guild, what's your vice, a la Greg Matthews' bluesy use of the word cat, Colin Miller's hair and his yet unexplained stint playing in Holland, and Stuart McGill's proclivity for red wine? Or have you never heard of any of these players because you were born in December 1999?
Now, I have heard of a couple of them, Funky Miller with his blue hair and stuff like that. Unfortunately, I got, the spin bowling sort of came with the Pennywise nicknames and stuff like that. So, everything unfortunate that happens to you, I guess you have to bowl spin. So, I have heard some of that.
Lloyd, what's better, bowling a batsman from a wrongen that he didn't pick or sex with a woman?
Probably a wrong one, I reckon. Have to go that.
Yeah, I also had the similar question. You don't have to answer. Sex is good, but how much better is it to humiliate hairy-chested Australian professionals with a well-disguised wrong one? Anyway, we have the answer to that. Lloyd, as the future king of Australian sport, both culturally and performatively, does it bother you that Pat Cummins is being spoken about as the next test captain when realistically this job is rightfully yours once Tim Payne steps down?
I don't think it's bothering me much, to be honest. I think taking a test 10 for he's not in the worst position to be a test captain in the future, so I think he's playing pretty well at the moment. I'd love to have the opportunity to put a baggy grin on my head at some stage. That'd be a fantastic moment if that were ever to happen. I've still got a long way to go, but I'm really looking forward to that if I get the opportunity.
Well, we know Kevin Roberts, so we might be able to help you out there.
That'd be great if you could. Put in a word for me. Yeah.
Look, Lloyd, why do you think Australians have been long intrigued by leg spin? Is it our rich, infrequent experiences with the concept over time, e.g. Tiger O'Reilly, Richie, Warney, etc., or mainly because we have no fucking idea against anything that doesn't closely resemble a bowling machine?
I think our spin, batters playing against spin, as we've found a little bit difficult, but I think leg spin's become a lot more favourable after what Warney's done in the last couple of years. And credit to him, it's an amazing achievement what he's done, taking 700 wickets, and it's made it look a lot more sexy, I reckon, and a lot more younger kids are trying to sort of model their game off him and try and bowl big leg spinners. So that's that's really really good that he sort of had that career to sort of base off, and a lot of other some continent sort of teams have got all of their amazing spinners. I've got Murali from Sri Lanka and Anil Kumble from India and those sort of blokes. So yeah, so a lot of the younger spinners in India and the subcontinent have those guys to look up to. So in Australia, it's nice that we sort of have that figurehead and one of the best leg spinners of all time. So yeah, it's really good to see that the younger guys are sort of copying him.
Well, Lloyd, after you know, your impressive and explosive you know, entry to your career and being labelled as the new Warn, can you please just promise the nation that you'll just keep your shit together after compiling an inevitable 800 test wickets?
Yeah, I'll try and keep my shit together. I'll try not to text too many different people.
Lloyd, you're obviously an Adelaide boy, but now with the Sydney Sixers, how quickly did you become the King of Sydney? And it must feel great to get an exemption to Sydney's lockout laws.
King of Sydney, I'm not too sure about that. I think we've got a couple of blokes that already think they are. I think Tom Curran thinks he's the King of Sydney from the Sixers, so he's pretty larger than life off the field. But, yeah, no, I wouldn't say I'm the King of Sydney just yet.
I don't even know what the punchline is to this. I just want to read a few things out. As your Instagram attests, you're already an absolute cult hero in the eyes of many Australians. Here are some comments. He's just a young throbber on the path to greatness. Some Hello Sport podcast. You should go on their show. Pope, your wrong'un is excellent. Someone else wrote, them fresh RMs in relation to your new RM Williams boots. Pope Zilly, you fucking lord. Someone else wrote, how are you dealing with this cult status?
Yeah, I do scroll through a couple of the comments and have a little bit of a laugh. And I know some of my mates send me some screenshots of what they find pretty funny. And I get a couple of little inboxes from Instagram from some of my subcontinent fans that don't really make a lot of sense sometimes, and a lot of love hearts and things like that. So definitely nice to have that stuff coming through. But on top of that, I also get a little bit of shit for when I do badly and stuff like that. But it's all part of it, and I'm learning to sort of deal with it and distinguish the good from the bad and just try and keep pretty level with it, to be honest.
You sound like a very level young man, Lloyd, which sort of belies how you actually look and bowl as a leg spinner. So I think all of our fans will be pleased to have heard from you and see that you're actually a normal person with a great personality. We appreciate you joining this show and dealing with some of those questions, and all the best for the rest of the season and beyond, mate. Don't forget us.
Thanks very much. I definitely won't forget you. I'll keep following that Facebook page.
Nice one, mate.
Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, Lloyd.
I don't play cricket for results. I don't come to take wickets, score runs, or win games. I play cricket to look good. Rigs, chests, pipes, circuits, salads. This is my domain. So when I hit the sheds, I need to radiate success. That's why I use Chop King Cologne by TGC. With a blend of the finest handcrafted English willow and Kookaburra Red King leather, Chop King Cologne lets me radiate cricket. Whatever the ground, whatever the circuit. Chop King Cologne. The new fragrance for men by TGC. Reek of runs without hitting them.
Hashtag ask TGC to wrap up this another wonderful episode of The Great Cricketer. I don't know why I'm talking like this.
Continue though.
It's one of those sleep podcasts when you've got insomnia, just listen to soothing voices.
Yeah, it's white noise. Yeah, I've got to say, some of the questions that have been coming in all aspects and all forums which people ask their questions have been coming in thick and fast. End of the season, people are in a very existential crisis. Went through a bit of a lull during the mid part of the season there, but they're coming in thick and fast now. So we will get through. I think there's like four here that I've got written down, so I'll get through them. But before we get onto that, our final show of the summer tour of 18-19, our Village Roadshow tour. finishes in Canberra this Friday, and we're performing at the Australian National University. And there are still tickets.
The big band room.
There's still tickets available. Thank you very much for everyone who's come. We were in Brisbane the other day. That was an amazing show. That was good fun. But yeah, final show, Canberra. You can get tickets online. Tickets are still available.
A couple of stats, he goes, actually, as they occur to me.
Yes.
Very gratefully, and we're humbled to have sold over 1,000 tickets to our live show.
Yeah.
We've cleared that number, which is great. Mm. We're about to pass 1 million downloads of our podcast as well. Mm. 1 million listens or downloads. I don't know what the metric is, but I just see the number.
Yes.
And it's creeping. It's sort of at 995.
I think it's listens. Is that which is the same thing.
Yeah.
Is that good?
I don't know if it's good, but
you
it's
can't
a
listen
thing.
To it if you don't download it, so it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, synonym.
So 995, that's great. And
so this is the episode where we go past 1 million.
This is the episode where we go past 1 million. Wow, and cool. We've been asked by our podcast network to enter into the Australian Podcast Awards,
right,
which is a naturally nerve-wracking thing to do for three insecure white guys. Mm-hmm. There's, as you know, there are very few podcasts with three white men espousing their views that nobody asked for.
Mm-hmm.
But we decided to have the courage to do it anyway.
Well, the Batuta Advocate told us to do it. So
that's
we thought, well, they're our bosses. We'll just do it.
Yeah.
You know, some people have
said that. And we did it. And we're not going to say that we were asked to do it or anything. Mm. We, of our own volition, chose to enter ourselves.
Yeah,
in
that's
these
right. We'll say that we were nominated by some external
it's
third
a pleasure
party. That we were
to be nominated
by
ourselves in this opt-in fee-based nomination.
Fee-based. Yeah, we actually paid to be. We paid to be.
Just like you pay to play cricket.
So, Pez, you know the details. You know the ins and outs of it. You know, perhaps better than anyone.
There's two categories, right? The one that you can vote for, and we're asking for your votes, which I just feel like I'm fucking cuckolded already doing it, you know. But here we are. It's the Australian Podcast Awards. We'll put a link to it. You know, validate us, don't validate us. Either way, it's probably funny. You can vote for like your 10 favorite podcasts in any category. But so we'll put a link up to that. There's also another category which like actual judges vote on. So we put a few podcasts in for that. I think we put the Kevin Roberts one in, and I don't know why I'm still talking about this.
Smart political move.
Yeah, Kevin Roberts and some other one.
Brad Hodge.
Maybe Brad Hodge, yeah, because we've got a lot of feedback on Brad Hodge.
Well, a lot of people said that they enjoyed the Zampa interview the most.
Did.
I mean, that was a wild interview.
It was one of my favourite three interviews, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what my favourite one. I think the most nervous one I've been for is actually Atherton.
Yeah, yeah.
Like more than Steve Waugh.
I reckon for me, the most nervous was the first Gideon Hay one we did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Even though I was over the phone, I didn't see him or anything.
I was nervous for Steve Waugh. Yeah. I just needed a laugh from him to set things away. I'm not sure we got one. I just remained nervous.
Yeah.
But the APAs, it's going to be the Night of Nights, isn't it?
Mm. Well,
just a bunch
night
of
nights.
Weird nerds hanging out at a podcast dinner.
I think it's actually at someone's garage. I think that's where they host it.
Yeah,
I think.
So this is the way we deal with the fact that we want recognition. We sort of pay it out, but then ask for you to help us because, scared, weird white dudes.
But if you, it'd be great if you listen to this podcast, click on a link, and then I think you have to click one more button.
Just
that'd
couple
be
of
nice.
Clicks.
It'll take,
be great.
It just barely takes 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just it's a quick thing.
Yeah.
You know, just
set
45 minutes aside of your day. That's all we're asking for.
Yeah.
Also, come to our live show in Canberra if you're in town.
Rate and review us as well on iTunes while you're at it. I mean, just generally, just get around us.
Yeah, like our stuff on social media. We've got a show on Channel 7 as well. You know, download the podcast. Million. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, let's answer some questions from the fans, which is basically a chance for us to pay them out. So thanks for writing in. Now we're out for you. Gavin Bannerman on Twitter says, I'm struck by elite cricketers saying on the podcast how much fun grade cricket is. Is this a covert alpha play? Knowing what is heaps of fun for them is existential ego hemorrhaging crisis for everyone else.
Mm.
I think hemorrhaging.
It's a nice phrase. Ego hemorrhaging. I think so. Mm. I think that's well spotted. Although, you should listen to the Zampa cast from last week.
Yeah.
It's called Zampa cast now. Where it's a new name of our show.
Yes.
But where he kicks off by saying, quite honestly, that he hates grade cricket.
Yeah.
So I guess it can go either way.
There's only two experiences in grade cricket: love and hate, and that's just in cricket in general. I mean, we used to open the podcast with love and hates.
Mm, that's right. True.
I don't know. Yeah.
No, wait. That was the radio show we did.
Yeah.
Like right. Years ago.
I don't know if I don't know if you guys picked up on this, but Jason sang on last week's show. He just seemed to have fun playing with his mates.
Mm.
I don't know if you guys picked that up.
We got a lot of feedback from people curious about Jason Sanger's personality and stuff, because the notion of a young man who simply enjoys playing cricket was very difficult for many of our fans
untrustworthy
to
person.
Contemplate. Yeah, that's right. What's his secret? Yeah, what's he hiding?
But
where are his skeletons?
Anything is fun when you're good at it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah. that could go anywhere. Yes. Let's just leave that.
Yeah.
Thomas Blackburn on Facebook, he says, "Dear TGC, Happy New Year. My club in Surrey has a conundrum on its hands and I think you can help. Our second 11 captain has stepped down from his role to focus on aiming to become a first 11 regular, leaving his position vacant. We got relegated last year, so it's really an opportunity for someone to step up and take us back into the prem where we belong. It's a chance for a hero, a saviour. There are three people vying for the place. I'll run you through their bios and I want you to tell me who to vote for at the AGM on Wednesday. Captain 1. His dad is the chairman. His dad comes to all the games. I am jealous. But that's not the point. He's a club man. He's captained the threes when he was 16 and led them to promotion in his first year at the helm. He's calm, level-headed, but he's only 21. Averages 17.80 in the last 2 years. His brother left a few years ago to play a higher standard in Yorkshire. It is agreed within the club that his brother was better than him. Captain 2, the rogue shout. He's 27. That's not the rogue bit. But when he hits them, they stay hit. If it were a rig-based selection, he'd be the only winner. He was a club emblem. He has a club emblem tattooed on his arm, and he can hit a golf ball further than you can, Ian. That's nice. No captaincy experiences. Loose cannon, bullet arm, good around the group. Captain 3, the experienced old-timer. Current 3's regular and former captain. He has a brother in the 1's and a brother in the 2's, and his dad is an umpire. This would boost his status at family dinners, but I don't want to waste my vote to make somebody else's dad proud of them. Also a club man. Involved in a lot of runouts, communication issues. Fucking hates losing. At the moment, I'm swaying towards Captain 1 because I went to school with him. Thanks, Tom." He also adds, "P.S., this is personal for you." He goes, "Because he used to play for us. So this is my club in the UK that he's talking about."
Right.
Right. Well, so you guys could have just taken this offline, couldn't you?
Yeah. you've probably been in a good position to offer.
I don't know who these people are.
Right, okay.
So I was literally going for your guidance of like, so Captain 1, his dad's a chairman. Captain 2 is the rig-based selection, and Captain 3 is an experienced old-timer.
I vote for Captain 3.
Yeah.
I think that I wasn't really listening for Captain 1, and also Captain 2, I don't think rig-based selection should ever be captain. Like, that should be a separate issue where that person can be the individual who is admired. When you give a rig a captaincy role, it kind of diminishes from their actual offering. Yes. They need to be standing alone. Captain 3, I like the idea that the captain is involved in run-out issues because it makes for very good post-match kind of speeches and stuff like that where the captain tries to avoid their own culpability in these kind of things when actually they're the symbol of the like disgrace that is your team.
Mm. Right. He also says that he fucking hates losing, Captain 3, which well, adds to your point of just like the post-match chat.
Was Captain 3 the one with lots of relatives at the club?
Yeah, so he has a brother in the 1s and brother in 2s and his dad is an umpire.
I just think he might get all his mates in there and stack the board and, you know, take the club into a terrible place. That would be my chief concern.
So he's going to take the club into administration is what you're saying?
Receivership.
Receivership. Okay. So that's answered none of your questions. Don't pick the rig-based selection.
I'd pick captain number 2 because he clearly loves the club because he's got a tattoo of it on his body.
Oh, okay.
Mm. So that and because if you ever really love anything, you put it on your body with ink.
Permanently. Mm.
I had a PE teacher who's who had a his girlfriend was Tamman, her last name escapes me, from Home and Away, and then they broke up, so he changed the tattoo to Stamina.
Yeah, I know who you're referring to.
Yes,
yeah. It was funny.
I thought you were saying Tamsin, but yeah, Stamsina. You know.
Also, not how you spell Stamina, famously. James Joseph. He says, dear TGC, I was saddened to hear that the Perth live show turnout wasn't what you wanted, but in our defence, it was the 21st, I think, which was the night before pretty much all cricketers in the city had a general bye, as well as the start of most people's holidays. So most people were probably out of nightlife spots trying to forget about cricket rather than hear more about it. Hopefully, if when you come again, it will be better. Now, on to my actual question. What is TGC's opinion on pubic salads? Manicured bush lends itself to a Chop King appearance, but a full-bodied appearance reeks of Dr. Happy's comment that real alphas don't compete. Pete, seeing as though you asked, my opinion is that it's age dependent and inversely related. If you're under 25, trimmed pubic salad is Chop King-esque and bush is virgin territory. However, if you're over 25, then a pristinely manicured pubic salad can symbolize sadness, loneliness and an internal emptiness, regardless of whether said individual chops up the local circuit or not, as Dave puts his head in his hands. Whereas lusciousness in the nether region can reflect a pure and true alpha's humble confidence. If you got to the end of this, then thank you for your time. Sincerely yours, Bush Boy.
Is it too late to use this in the Australian Podcast Awards?
I feel sick.
I genuinely am nauseous.
Yeah. So he's asking, like, what is the go-to for, you know, the shower, you know, when you're into the showers, you know, pubic art is what he's asking.
He's asking us to give a view on the way men trim their hair based on demographics.
Yes.
Up there for I'm a bit floored by it. I don't know what you should do with your pubes. I don't think – I actually haven't thought about it.
Well, if you trim it tight, Pez, you can get the optical inch.
Well, I know that fully well. Mm. I'm aware of that, but I don't know how it
– Why are you staring into the middle distance?
I just
Why are you going sick. Ghostly white?
When do you think people listen to this? Do people like driving along? Are the children in the car?
Yeah. I have family that listen. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So this isn't going to make the final cut.
No, not
superiors
really.
Superiors at work that listen.
Yeah. Why?
No, it'll make it. I think that the way we're reacting is part of the reaction to the question. It's
a visceral bizarre reaction. Question.
I think Bush Boy was probably looking for this.
Yeah.
So. Like, surely Bush Boy wasn't looking for like a really specific theory.
Well, why was he asking the question is probably the bigger question.
I don't know. What do you think?
I think he's lonely. I think Bush Boy is lonely. I've already forgotten his name. Just Bush Boy is now Bush stuck Boy. In my head. Is he from the country? Is that why they call him that?
Yeah, it was Bradman's nickname originally.
The ghost of Bradman is written in.
Tom Fisher says, "Hi, boys. I'm returning to Australia after 5 years abroad, and after listening to your podcast, I'm now stewing over the thought of being champed by so-called alphas with more substantial pipes and salads to that of mine," as Dave puts his head in his hands again. "My question to you is, does one reserve the right to reply with a wry pal, chief, or bud in a bid to counter alpha the other, or does champ beat all of these?"
Does one reserve the right?
Good question, Tom. How do you respond to, like, often when you're champed, it's like so like startling.
It's jarring.
My cafe across the road from me, I got there at like 2 p.m. and the kitchen had just closed. And they know me very well because I live directly opposite them. Mm. And I asked, you know, is the kitchen still open? He went, "Oh, sorry, champ." And I went, "Oh, okay, no worries." And he goes, "Yeah, sorry about that, chief." So I got champed and chiefed by my local barista who lives directly opposite me and sees me every day.
You often do get the double though. Once they get in the ball with one, they can't just...
Do they get buoyed by the first one that worked well? And he obviously saw my face crumble
I like the idea that if he's saying it earnestly, he's like, I realise I can't give him the food that he's after, but if I do affix the suffix champ and chief, he might feel better about himself. Well, I have called him a champion and also a chief of industry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, also, so that's my favourite cafe and also my favourite bottle shop, Amato's in Leichhardt, for anyone who's playing at home. The guy there continually calls me boss. Mm. Every single time I go in, "G'day, boss. I'm not your boss. Mm. I don't govern
you." And stop kind of pretending that I'm going to feel better to feel like your boss.
Just give me this fucking cask wine.
But you sort
and
of are
his
boss. You are the consumer. Like you have the
customer's boss.
Yes, right. You have the dollar.
Customer's boss.
So we're all the bosses of cricket, cricketers that we watch on television.
Absolutely.
We're their bosses. We're the consumer. The consumer wins everything.
Yeah,
correct.
So we can champ them.
Okay. Can we check in on champ at the moment? Like,
in what capacity?
Has the zeitgeist changed? Like, is there a greater awareness now?
Well, anytime it happens on any sort of platform, our notifications blow up.
Well, we try to introduce new interesting variants of champ, like, you know, Champions League, Champs-Élysées, say.
Champignon.
Champignon in the book.
Mm. AFC Champions League.
AFC Champions League.
It's the Asian Federation.
It's the AFC that's the best bit.
Yeah. So specific.
Exactly. Yeah. How are you, AFC Champions League?
Not enough of it.
There's so much pressure on us to continually evolve the champion moniker. You know, that's the best I've got at the moment.
I don't know how to respond to being champed though, because when you are champed, like, it's like who gets in first.
There's no coming back. Yeah,
there's no coming back from it. So, like, to answer Tom's question, like, champ does beat all of these. It beats all of them.
It's the nuclear option.
It's a nuclear option.
All right, nuclear.
Lads, final one. Not really a question, but an observation. Matthew Taylor He's got a blue tick. He has tweeted us and he said, well-known Sydney great cricketer, former pro and batting coach Cameron Merchant starring in the new season of Married at First Sight. Allegedly, his love of the game and determination to keep playing has got in the way of past relationships. This is great cricketer on steroids, says Matthew. So are you guys aware of the program Married at First Sight?
I'm aware of its existence.
Yeah, okay. So do I need to describe to what it is for the listeners at home? It's basically it's a show where people have never met before. The first time they meet is at the altar. They get married. It's a social experiment, inverted commas, where it's really just people just laughing at you, living your life like that. So, you know, Cameron Merchant's gone on there, captain of Manly First Grade. Pez, you know Cameron?
Yes. Cameron is a very good player.
Yeah.
I think he might have played some first-class cricket in New Zealand.
Yeah.
I've coached with him before as well. He's a lovely person, very popular. Some great pictures going around Instagram and Facebook of him with various grade cricketers laughing at all of this. Great rig as well.
Isn't the thing is that we're laughing at him, but we're also laughing at ourselves, because this is just indicative of every single great cricketer who's like pursued cricket and it's got in the way of like relationships or other loves, not just, you know, the opposite sex.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was profiled firstly as a professional cricket player, so lying off the get-go. Yeah, apparently played a little bit of some, you know, he was paid at one point in his, we all were, but he was paid at one point. But it seems as if cricket got in the way of his relationships. And now he's trying to turn that around. I cannot get enough humour out of this. It is fantastic.
Didn't he say that part of the reason he requires this social experiment is because your cricket has essentially been his bride? He's not been able to sustain a relationship because of the impact and time, cost of cricket.
But also, like, this bloke thinks he can go and just dedicate. This bloke thinks.
This bloke.
Getting aggressive. No, he's obviously a nice guy, but he's been playing cricket his whole life, and now he thinks he can just turn up and get a woman immediately. He wants to just have it all, doesn't he? He doesn't want to play cricket, dedicate 20 years, you know, then end at 35 and then just have 10 years of loneliness and wondering what the fuck you're doing with your life before, you know, settling for someone and marrying them. He wants to get married immediately.
Immediate fix.
Should we let him do that?
There could be a partnership between Married at First Sight and, you know, New South Wales or any Australian Premier cricket as well. I mean, I think it's a great – I mean, we're looking at ways to help players adjust to life outside cricket. Perhaps this could become part of the way you retire. You know, you play cricket your whole life, but you know that as soon as you finish, you can just go on a Married at First Sight.
Someone finds you, and as
Dave said, get a woman.
I don't know if I said that, but we'll listen back to it.
Is Married at First Sight on Channel 7?
No, unfortunately. It would have been a great cross-promotional option.
Oh, well, we fucked up again. That's the great cricketer for this week. There's so many things going on in this episode. Thanks as ever for downloading this. We'll see you next week.